This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This has been a year of incredible focus on the police and policing. And not only in the United States. In Nigeria, people have risen up in a movement that's come to be known by its hashtag, End SARS. Now, to be clear, this is not SARS, the virus. SARS, S-A-R-S, is the acronym for the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, a sort of undercover unit of the Nigerian police. That squad is notorious. They've been accused of extortion, abduction, and killing. In October, a video surfaced that appears to show a SARS officer shooting a young man who's driving a Lexus. The officer pulled the man's body out of the car, then got in and drove off. And as happened here after the video of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis, people were galvanized and poured into the streets. Anakwa Jemina is on the editorial staff of The New Yorker, and he's been following the protests from the start.
In early October, I noticed the hashtag #EndSARS trending. I'm originally from Ghana, and I had joined protests this summer in the U.S. against police brutality. I'd been wondering what it would look like to see people back home in West Africa rise up. Now, Nigerians have protested SARS in the past. The government has even promised to disband the unit, but nothing has ever come out of that. So this time, I was amazed to see elderly men and women marching, saying they were doing so that their grandkids wouldn't have to. And also to see in a country where divides can cut deep, Christians keeping watch for Muslim brothers as they prayed, traditional African priests out in the streets, which you rarely see, and other groups like the LGBTQ community showing up in force. I mean, it was really inspiring.
Our brothers and sisters are being killed, especially in Lekki.
They murdered a lot of people in Lagos.
The protests that I went on were very peaceful. They were an incredibly vibrant atmosphere. You had music playing to invigorate the crowd, and the speakers would address the local community. My name is Dr. Eniola Anuluakpo Shoyemi.
Dr. Shoyemi is a political theorist from Nigeria. She's also a fellow at the European University Institute in Italy, but she's home now in Lagos. Early on, she was taking her children to the street protests, but things got violent when the government cracked down. On October 20th, the Lagos state government issued a curfew with very little lead time.
So they gave like 4 or 5 hours of notice. Now, you have to understand that Lagos is a place where it takes you like 3 hours to get somewhere that it should ordinarily take you 10 minutes. It was clear that they just hadn't thought this thing through.
So the curfew was not entirely followed and the Nigerian army was called in.
Soldiers reportedly opening fire on demonstrators in the country's biggest city, Lagos.
Officers repeatedly shot at hundreds of protesters. At least a dozen protesters were killed in an area called Lekki Toll Gate. It's still not clear just how many.
And the thing that was so disheartening about it was that most of those protesters are recorded sitting down and they're recorded singing the national anthem as soldiers are firing bullets into them. I mean, it's all so messed up. It's so messed up.
Now, all of this started because of this special anti-robbery squad, SARS. Who are they targeting and why?
So, lots of people have said that the main targets of SARS are young, rich people, especially young, let me not say rich, but young, well-to-do males who, you know, are driving in either their own or their parents' nice cars, who have nice laptops on them, nice phones on them, who are asking them for bribes or who take their cars from them or their laptops or whatever it is, and who say because they're young, they must have stolen the car or whatever. I mean, I guess the thing that I would like us to think about that is that, yes, sure, SARS do target those groups of people, but SARS targets everybody. And SARS probably targets poor people way more than they target the well-off. It's just you don't get to hear about it. They just take their suffering and they carry on along.
So why was SARS created in the first place?
SARS was created in 1992 as a special unit of the Nigerian police force. This is a peak time of insecurity in Nigeria, where there is just so much violence, both by the military and then also by ordinary civilians who are, for whatever reason, whether it's poverty, lack of education, lack of opportunities, perpetrating crimes that are not normal in the country and that are not, you know, your ordinary crimes that the federal police force is used to dealing with. So armed robberies, kidnapping and such. So that's why SARS was founded.
So Anuola, is SARS somehow worse than other police in Nigeria? Or is SARS just a symptom to a much bigger problem?
So the answer to both questions is not an either or. It's a yes and yes, I think. SARS is both special from the rest of the police force in that they appear to be able to exert more violence in a way that they don't even hide it. They operated with a particular understanding that their powers were limitless. And they are also part of a larger problem because what we're talking about is a federal police force that is very, very violent. So you have, for instance, let's put some numbers on it, is violent at level 3. And then SARS is violent at level 4, right? We're still talking about a level of violence that is just completely unacceptable. Kidnapping citizens, raping people on a nearly daily basis.
So this anti-robbery squad then was created in reaction to a very specific and real problem that was happening. Looking at its history, however, it looks like this is not the first time that the public, whom were supposed to be protected by this squad, has called for the doing away with it. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
I think this is the fourth time that the government has said, oh, we're disbanding SARS. And they don't say we're disbanding SARS just of their own initiative. They say we're disbanding SARS usually as a response to a call from the public to disband SARS. Now, these are the loudest. They are the most qualitative and the most quantitative call to get rid of SARS. This is something new. And what made me want to take part is that these were protests that just had so much community engagement. It was the first time, certainly in my lifetime, that my generation and the generation behind me were doing something collectively. And I'm told consistently that, oh, Nigerians don't protest. We suffer and we smile, as the song goes. I have my parents telling me about the 80s and 90s and how hard it was to get people out into the streets and having to do protests from Friday to Sunday because people wouldn't protest Monday to Friday. But and SARS prove them wrong. Why did they happen at this scale at this time? I mean, there's such a confluence of things. You have COVID, you have people being told that they're not allowed to go and engage in their livelihoods, which in Nigeria is like a do or die situation. I mean, you tell somebody whose job it is to go and hawk bread or, you know, peanuts or whatever it is, they're not allowed to go out. They can't sell their peanuts over Zoom. They can't sell their bread over Zoom. So what you're saying to them is, if you go out, you'll catch COVID and die. If you stay in, you won't make your 200 naira and you'll die. Because we as a government don't give you any, there's no safety net.
So here in the U.S., there's been this call to defund the police, partly because of police brutality, but also because of multiple failed attempts to reform police departments. In Nigeria, where you are, however, activists and experts are calling for quite the opposite, for more funding. So what exactly do people want to see there when it comes to SARS or the police?
The reason why I think you have what looks like diametrically opposed proposals in both contexts, you have an American context where people are going, defund the police, don't pay the police as much, they get all this pay, and in some cases, they even take it out of state lines, so they're not using it, you know, for the benefit of whatever community they're meant to be members of. Also, you're using all this money to procure a level of arms and ammunition and a militarized complex that is not necessary for what we deem to be the proper work of police. And then you have in the Nigerian context where people go, okay, these police officers that are meant to be doing this particular kind of job need way more support. They need better support with pay. They need better support with basic things. But do not make the mistake of thinking that when you increase police pay, that is going to make them do their jobs better. They are not killing people. They are not brutalizing people just because they are poorly paid and they're badly housed. There is a deeper problem in the society that makes it beneficial for them to do their jobs poorly. In all societies, in all modern societies, the infrastructure of law enforcement is always made to protect insiders or whoever the community has defined for itself as being the insiders to that community. And to protect those insiders and sustain those insiders from outsiders. And so the way the police and law enforcement and the community itself treats insiders is always going to be different from the way it treats outsiders. 99% of us are considered to be outsiders in a society, in a community on land that we own. And we are perceived by our governments, government after government after government, to be incapable of ruling ourselves truly. This is our property and this is our society. And the fact that the state is not reflective of our communities, that is the problem. That is the deeper problem.
What has happened since the at least a dozen or so protesters were shot and killed on October 20th at Lekki toll gate?
Just an array of disappointing things. The first thing that has happened, I have already alluded to, the government responded as if nothing had happened and that we had basically behaved like wayward children. Then you had the governor of Lagos State who said his office did not call in the army. It turns out that they did. What else has happened since then? We've then had judicial panels, these fake judicial panels. Okay, they're not fake. They're real. They were constituted. But in terms of the what they are supposed to produce, which is justice for the people who have complaints against SARS and who have petitions against SARS, it's very much doubtful. So, I mean, you just live in a place that shows you time and time again that it really, really doesn't care about you.
Eniola Shoyemi is a Max Weber Fellow at the European University Institute. Last week, activists from around the world, including Greta Thunberg, called for an investigation into the shootings and for the release of all jailed protesters and journalists. Anakwa Gemina reports for The New Yorker.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.